Now, Mr. President, this won't take but just a second, but I wanted to report to you something which you might find of interest in connection with my check in Albuquerque.
Yeah.
Relative to our conversation last night, Governor Agnew's charter plane, American Airlines, arrived in Albuquerque on the 2nd, which is the pertinent date which that most important phone call was received here in Washington at 11:44 a.m. It departed at 2:10 p.m. that date for Harlingen, Texas. Now, as soon as a plane landed at the airport and rolled up to the ramp, three phones were put on there. Two of the phones were not used, but the first phone put on was used five times, or else calls charged were charged to this particular phone from a pay phone. Now, the first phone call was the most pertinent. That was made at 11:59 a.m. and was made to Washington, D.C. I have the telephone number to Dean Rusk from Governor Agnew.
Yeah, we have that.
On a person-to-person basis for 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Second call was made by a staff member, Kent Crane, chargeable to it, and was made to a Cal Purdy in Harlingen, Texas.
Yeah. I spell it?
P-U-R-D-Y.
C-A-L-P-U-R-D-Y.
P as in Paul, U-R-D-Y. That lasted for 3 minutes and 10 seconds. Now, that third call was also made by Crane to a telephone number in New York City, and I traced that down to our New York office. That phone belongs to Bruce Friedel, F-R-I-E-D-L-E.
F-R-I-E-D-L-E.
Now, this man is a sculptor in New York City, and his address is 304 East 76th Street. Now, the fourth phone call, incidentally, this one to New York lasted for 9 minutes and 40 seconds. The fourth call was made to a Mr. Jim Miller in New York City. I'm checking out his background at the present time. I have his telephone number, of course. And that call lasted for 2 minutes and 22 seconds. The fifth and last call was made to a Mr. Hitt at Nixon Agnew campaign headquarters by a staff member, again, Kent Crane, which lasted for a minute and 51 seconds. And this is the phone chargeable to Maurice Stans there at the Willard Hotel, which they used for Nixon Agnew campaign headquarters. Now, there were no toll calls to the South Vietnamese embassy on that date. There were none to the Little Flower or the Dragon Lady, as we call her, from Albuquerque. But I did want to make sure you knew about this one to Mr. Rusk, Secretary Rusk.
Well, now, we think that somebody from that plane talked to the woman. We think pretty well that they talked to her and talked to Rusk and talked on the same thing.
They could have.
And we think that they told Rusk they wanted to know what was happening in these relations.
Yes, sir.
Rusk made notes of it, but he didn't know exactly what time, but he estimated that it was about 2 o'clock, I believe he said. I've forgotten. Could have been 1 o'clock, but I thought he said
9 a.m.
Well, that was their time, though.
Yes, sir, that's right.
So,
2 hours different.
And hers was immediately followed by a call to her, we think. And what we want to know is what time that was, or if it was.
Well, there are no toll calls made to her by name. Now, this call to New York, to the sculptor, I'll check our physical surveillance records and see if she was in New York on that date. She could have been in this man's apartment, this Bruce Friedel.
No, she says that she just finished talking to Albuquerque.
That's right, on the teletype, yes, sir.
And she says she just finished talking to Albuquerque. Your call got that.
Right.
And he says to hold on. Do nothing. And we think that is the story.
Right.
We think that's what they did.
Yes, sir.
Until he unleashed them here the other day.
Right.
So we just have to go back and see what happened there. I don't know if it's lost there somewhere, unless there's somebody, unless it's hidden under this name of Kent Crane here in Washington.
Well, Kent Crane was a staff member of the Agnew staff, who called from the plane.
Well, who was it in Washington they talked to?
They talked to
Rusk.
talked to a man by the name of Hitt, H-I-T-T, at campaign headquarters.
Dix Agnew headquarters.
Yes, sir, and that was 1 minute and 51 seconds, and it came in at 1:02 p.m. their time, which would have been 3:02 p.m. our time.
1:02. Now, that is the call that's important.
All right, sir.
Because that was right after the Rust call.
All right.
You see, well, let's see. I don't know. It could be 11:59. That would be...
An hour's difference. A little over an hour.
Oh, yes, it is. Now, I thought it was just 2 minutes difference. 1:02 our time, you said?
That's right. 1:02 p.m.
What time would that be, Albuquerque time?
That'd be 3:02 p.m.
No. It would?
No. Well, it couldn't have been because the plane departed at 2:10 from Harlingen, Texas.
Yep.
So it's 2:10 p.m. that time would have been 4:10 p.m. our time, so it could have been too, Mr. President. 1:02 p.m. would have been 3:02 our time, and then the plane left 58 minutes later for Texas. Now, what I'll do is check our physical surveillance log, because we had a tail on the little flower at that time, and we can find
out. Just get right where she is, and we'll find this. I know this. I don't think that there's anything startling about it, because I just proceeded on the assumption, I believe I'm right, that he called Rusk, and he said what is going on but in South Vietnam, the very question that he and she were talking about.
Right.
Rusk told him. He didn't think anything of it, but he made notes on the conversation. And he made notes of the time, just approximate time. He reported those to us. Then she comes along and she says to the South Vietnamese embassy, she was a carrier, that's what she was.
Right.
She said, I have just heard from my boss in Albuquerque, who says his boss says we're going to win and you tell your boss to hold on a while longer.
Right.
Now that's the net of it.
That's right. We had that in a teletype.
Now she's got to get that. I don't know whether I got that from their outgoing to Saigon. I believe that she said that to her boss. I believe the Du Gem said it. Anyway, I have that information. So I know that she told the ambassador that. I know that the ambassador told Saigon that. I know that Rusk told Agnew what the facts were.
Right.
Now, I believe that Agnew told her that, because she says, I have just talked.
Right.
And there must be an incoming call to her.
Well, the toll calls don't show that, and we still have them in our possession.
Well, didn't you have her house, weren't you looking after her, too?
No, we had a physical surveillance on her, and we had a wiretap on the South Vietnamese embassy.
But you didn't have one on her?
No, sir. We can still put it on.
No. This is, we want that South Vietnamese embassy awfully careful, because this may determine whether we go back to bombing and whether we have another war or not.
Yes, sir.
And if we hadn't had this, we would never had the statements we had the other day.
Right. Now, did you say, and just to confirm what you just said, we did intercept that phone call that she made to Ambassador Bui Diem, and she said specifically that my boss says to hold off, that we're going to win. Hold off.
Well, see, the ambassador told his president that.
Yep.
And his president told a bunch of people that.
Yes.
That we are watching him pretty close, as you can imagine, in Saigon.
Right.
And he repeated, this went all through the chain of command. Now, the only thing I've got to do is see who her boss is, which we think is Agnew, because Albuquerque is the place. And we ought to look at that log awfully careful, because if she talked to Albuquerque, that is a cinch.
Well, I think the key is, then, that she probably was at the campaign headquarters. This 1:02 p.m. call was to her. May have been made to Mr. Hitt by name, but she got on the phone.
May very well be.
I'll check the physical surveillance log.
May very well be. That's probably what it was. She got the message from Albuquerque. That's logical that he was the one gave it, because when she called Rusk, that's what we thought.
Right.
Because that's the only way he could get information to give her, was from Rusk.
Right. Right, sir.
Okay.
I wanted to mention that my immediate boss has been called to go up to New York tomorrow to talk to the new man. And plans to stay up there for the weekend. I don't know what they're going to discuss.
You mean the top man here?
Oh, yeah.
The one that we had to buy ride yesterday.
That's right. That's right.
I think he will explore to see whether he thinks that he is up to it. And I told him that I did not know that I had planned to have him, but the luncheon didn't go through, that I had planned for some time to name you.
Yes, sir.
If the other fellow would get out that, 3 or 4 years ago, right after I came in, 4 or 5 years ago, I had made the extension. That these Georgia people were rather dependable, and Rusk was from Georgia. He's very fond of Rusk. He said so several times.
Yes.
So I thought that would be a good thing, and I said they are loyal, and they stay with you, and they don't ever let you down. I think that he will have that in mind. I think he'll evaluate it and see what he thinks about that situation.
Yes, sir.
You have to be sure whether it's the man himself or some subordinate that's talking to him.
Yes, sir. Right.
He does, I know, want to decide on the CIA and FBI.
Right.
He told me that.
Well, I'll stick it out, Mr. President. As you told me once before, just stick around, do the best you can.
We'll watch it, and he'll be talking to me about it beforehand, I'm sure.
Right, sir.
Okay.
I'll get this other side.
All right.